It's time for the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never get an answer?
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Beautiful day. Just love it today. Mrs. Future, good to see you.
You too.
Yeah, we got up extra early today to watch the space launch.
That's right. We like to watch these billionaires going into the upper fields of the atmosphere.
And Bobby, were you there too? Did you wake up?
No,
I'm still awake.
Oh, you were sleeping. Did it start at 5:30 a.m.?
It took 6:30. Off around 9 o'clock Eastern time, so 6 o'clock our time.
Yeah.
So you were in bed by then, eh?
Yeah, deep sleep.
We actually woke up a half hour early and then set alarms. And then we were actually sound asleep. The alarm went off and we were 6 minutes from the launch because they delayed it about 6 minutes. And so that was perfect for us.
Yeah. We just listened to the press conference on the way down with Bezos and the gang. We're going to talk about it in more depth in the second half hour from 2:30 to 3. We have Dr. Bruce Damer coming on to share his thoughts on billionaires in space and what this means for the future of space travel and whether it's a good idea or should it still go back to the governments. You know, and is this a good way to spend money? We'll go more detail in the next half hour. It was a fine launch, I might add. However, you know, for $250,000 for 11 minutes seems a little bit short for me. I think I'd go for the Elon Musk orbital coming up. But it's the beginning of some big things.
Yes. And Jeff Bezos did say at the following press conference after the flight that they have sold $100 billion worth of tickets. $100 million worth of tickets on future flights on New Shepard. And he also said, very interestingly, that New Shepard booster rockets are actually being tested for use in the next iteration of the rockets, which are the Glens, the new Glens. So these are the new Shepard rockets. They're going to be doing space tourism. The new Glens, I guess, will be for the next layer of orbital servicing, you know, when they're delivering packages to the space station
or
something.
Well, instead of up and down, it'll be up and away.
Right.
We've got some news to cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good step.
Good news on the Hubble. It returns to normal operations.
Oh,
thank
hooray.
God. Yeah, this is great.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. Only a few weeks of systems upgrades.
A hiatus of more than a month. The controller has successfully switched the observatory to a backup payload computer. They finally got it working on the backup payload computer on the 31-year-old telescope. That's almost nearly 5 weeks of downtime.
Yeah, well, they tested everything that they had access to, right? Just, what's broken?
Well, the cause most likely was a malfunction of the power control unit of the payload computer. And that's the unit that supplies the power, the voltage to the hardware in the computer.
Oh, and so, of course, the Hubble guru, the computer guru, what's the first law of computer gurus when things aren't working?
Simplify.
No, turn it off and turn it on.
Oh, yeah, recycle.
So recycle, if your power switch isn't working, so much for your Hubble guru. He doesn't have any power anymore.
So they had no ability to reset the power or control unit from the ground, so they had to switch to the backup science instrument command and data handling hardware, which had its own power control unit. And that transition to the backup hardware started on July 15th. And by the 16th, they had success in turning on the backup computer system.
All right. Always glad to have a backup.
And then on the 17th, they restored the science instruments from their safe modes, which they had been in since the payload computer malfunctioned back on June 13th.
Yeah. So June to July, a month and 2 days or so.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like servers. I installed hundreds of servers in racks before. And you always have a backup power supply. So it's not just one, but you have two. And it's supposed to fail over so that it continually runs. But that's what they had. They had a backup power supply control unit. Yeah.
It would be nice to have not one, but two decent optical telescopes in space. You know, be able to do tandem missions.
Yeah.
So that's good news this week. That's nice space news. Also, speaking of telescopes and cameras, we have an interesting story on how DARPA had begun working on cameras that mimic the human brain. You know how your camera phone often doesn't take good pictures?
Mm-hmm.
Well, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, is working on the development of cameras that process images more like the human brain.
What does that mean?
Well, one of the things that we found about the brain is that it has different stages of processing. Like when you're looking at an image, the optical nerve is taking information from the world to the occipital lobe in the back of the brain. Mm-hmm. But it's processing the image all along the route. While in our normal cameras and such, our electrical wires just carry the same signal from one end to the other. And the optic nerve, as the signal is traveling along the nerve, it's processing the image. And what I mean by that is that there's a station along the nerves that processes the ability to see edge detection.
Okay.
So it's looking for edges.
Okay.
And it processes all the edges that it finds in your field of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another will look at the brightness contrast issues.
Mm-hmm.
Various elements.
Maybe also the color distribution.
Yeah, and motion, types of motion that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the rods and cones are the receptors picking up all this information and processing it. And by the time it reaches the brain and the occipital lobe, the image is heavily processed.
Mm. Sure. Know?
So the DARPA computers are thinking about this, and they're looking at how can we create cameras that process data more efficiently. And this is one of the ways in which they can do that, which is pretty neat. And a very interesting article on it. I think if you look at that, you'll see that soon our technology will become more efficient, more like our biological processing built into our system.
Wow.
Pretty cool stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, brain-like cameras.
Yeah, brain cameras.
Yeah.
Biocybernetic organisms at its finest. We must go to a break, but we'll come back with some more Dr. and Mrs. Future Show input. And we got a caller. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yes, we do. Let's say hello to Ted in Salinas. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Ted.
Hey, how's it going? You know, listening to the show, you guys commenting on the space flights here, recent Bezos and the other guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, to me, I don't know. It feels watered down. I don't know why. It's like people with money, and you're talking a lot of money those folks got. They can do anything they want. So I'm just wondering how deep their interest really is in this, or if it's just a fly-by-night thing that somebody who's got a ton of money reminds me of somebody going to the top of Mount Everest and getting dropped off with a hot air balloon. You know, it's like the thrill, it's pretty up there, but he didn't really, you know, I don't think he put the time and training and everything. He put the money in. But money's not everything, and it just seems that they're taking something and kind of making it into a, it just doesn't feel right. Another thing, a quick thing I'd like to mention is there's a ton of folks out on the roads now that are driving and sideshows and spinning their cars and driving crazy. I wish NASCAR would step up and eliminate that at the end of the races, because this stuff didn't start until those drivers started putting smoke screens up after every time they win a race. They'll burn the tires off for 20 minutes, and it's given a bad image. You know, a football game or a baseball game, you don't see the celebration like that. It's retarded. Mm. So people need to take action where action needs to be taken. And for these guys to run around spending that kind of money on something that I really don't think they're that devoted to, they'll come up with something else in their life, and they'll have some other people paying big dollars you know, in that club. You know, that's just my comment.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Ted.
Yeah. Okay. Just a comment on the Bezos situation. This is just the front end for him. He's been a space aficionado.
Nerd.
Since he was a kid. He was in the L5 Society, which was all about space colonies.
Oh, yeah. The L5 orbit, zone is the gravitational zone where the moon and Earth balance of gravity allows things to float without fuel, right? If you're in the L5 club, you're in definitely a planetary nerd club.
Yeah, he's been involved with that kind of thinking way, way back. Mm-hmm. And in the press conference, he spoke quite extensively about how he used a rocket that's way more powerful than what's needed for the current mission, which is just to go up and down, mm-hmm. to go up to the 62 miles for the space experience zero gravity for 4 minutes and then come back. Mm-hmm. It's actually designed to scale up to going into orbit and going to the moon, going to Mars, that sort of thing.
So he also made the point that the fuel that he chose to use is a hydrogen fuel and the exhaust is basically water vapor.
Hydrogen and oxygen. You're burning liquid hydrogen and oxygen, which is a very powerful fuel. Liquid hydrogen is one of the most powerful fuels you can use and produces water as a byproduct. Yeah. So not a pollutant.
Well, and also just to address Ted's concern that these are ego projects on the part of these guys with money to burn, I see it very differently. And I see it that we are in an era where we're on the new frontier is space, where that is where the explorers of the world have set their sights, because the world is ready for us to start colonizing other places in our solar system. And it's not easy to do. It's hard to do. And most people would not have an interest in it. And the people that do have an interest in it, as we were talking about at breakfast this morning, you don't go to space because you want to be more free or because you want to show off. You go to space because you know that good things will come that will benefit all of the planet from extending our reach beyond where we are now. And you can only do that with a sustaining interest. You can't do it on a whim.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, we'll go into more in depth in the next half hour on this with Dr. Damer.
Right.
I wanted to cover a couple other stories before we do.
Okay.
One is that there's been a new internet record speed broken in Japan, an internet speed record. Speaking of NASCAR, how's this for a speed record? 319 terabits per second data transfer. 319 terabits.
You have to make that real for me, honey. How much data is in a terabit?
Okay, well,
tera is like Earth-sized.
Well, most people are not getting even 1 terabit. They're not even getting 1 gigabit, which is a thousandth of a terabit. They're getting maybe 5 megabits.
So 5 megabits has been passing for really good bandwidth.
Reasonably,
right?
Okay. And that's considered mediocre.
And 10 is considered,
right,
you know, enough to broadcast your own show.
50
is what you want.
4K. You need 15 megabits per second to do a 4K stream.
Okay, so this is 1,000 times that.
And we can get, like, what do we have at the beaches? We have the 400 megabits down. Okay.
So 1,000 times Xfinity. A megabit is a gigabit, and then 1,000 times that is a terabit?
Yeah, this is 319 terabits.
So a million times. Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. That's a record that beats the last record, which was 179 terabits by a British-Japanese team in August of 2020. So almost double in 1 year.
And what are they doing with it?
Well, and I don't think anyone's figured out all the things to do with it yet. But the 6G comes to mind.
6G.
Yeah, 6G. A completely autonomous transportation system, aircraft system. Obviously, space system going into orbit. You know, all these craft can be a part of networks that just work.
So the info superhighway is becoming an info tsunami?
Well, a tsunami is...
I mean, I'm just talking about, we were calling the internet the info superhighway, right?
Yeah.
And so now I'm saying it's getting so big that it's not just a superhighway, it's a tsunami.
Well, a tsunami suggests there's going to be a problem with it.
Well, not necessarily.
Maybe not.
It means a big, giant wave of the ocean.
Yeah, it's a tsunami of change. How's that? Beyond 5G.
I mean, tsunamis are only bad if you happen to be on land underneath when they strike, right?
Well, how do they do this, though? They virtually upgraded every stage of the pipeline. Mm-hmm. Fiber optic line has four cores instead of one. They fired a 552-channel comb laser at multiple wavelengths with rare earth amplifiers. They use coiled fiber. All of this to simulate a test range of 1,864 miles. Hmm. And they were able to go that whole length without losing signal quality or speed.
Now notice none of that is wireless. That's all fiber.
Yeah, wireless lags way behind this. Mm-hmm. But it's speeding up as well.
I think that bodes well for the future of our info superhighways that will have renewed incentive to go fast through fiber.
Yeah. What would you use 319 terabits for, Bobby?
I was just watching this YouTube video on 6G.
Yeah.
And yeah, we need something like what's coming out of your Thunderbolt at 40 gigs in order to have all the cars be conscious of each other on the road.
Yeah.
In order to get to like 2030 or 2035 to the point where we do have 6G, you need these kind of speeds. It's
the ultimate decentralized surveillance state.
Yeah, exactly.
But what we're surveilling is the autonomous cars.
Well, that's one of the levels. Transportation follows communications in terms of the evolution here. Mm-hmm. So communications, transportation.
So your example from the past would be something like we had the telephone before we had the automobile?
Well, we had the telegraph before the telephone.
Oh, the telegraph. Okay.
You might think of that as an improved bandwidth. It'll go to the point also, in the virtual realms, we'll be able to create augmented reality environments that seamlessly combine digital with reality. Mm-hmm. The true holodecks.
Oh. Well, we kind of have that now with our Oculus, just being able to set the guardian and see the environment through the goggles, right?
Yeah, it would be considered very primitive. It's like a Stanley steamer compared to what we're talking about here.
Right.
It'll allow us to have knowledge bases transfer. Like, for example, you remember in medicine, they have the Da Vinci machine that allows you to do operations. Mm-hmm.
The remote doctor. Like your doctor can be in his hospital room and the Da Vinci can be someplace remote and he's controlling the robot arms.
Yeah. I was just digitizing some footage of an early Da Vinci I saw years ago. But you'll be able to control Da Vincis anywhere in the world. And so you'll be able to have the expertise of very high quality surgeons, for example, applied to places all over the planet. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to do many more operations.
Yeah, and of course, if you're willing to, and I'm reminded that the first example that I saw of that being tested was a person getting a tattoo.
It's
a real trust issue.
Yeah, remote tattoo. First one I saw was a Da Vinci sewing up a skin wound. Mm-hmm. The doctor was sewing remotely using little grippers. Mm-hmm. It didn't look as easy as in real. It's definitely a skill set that the physician had to learn. But that technology is improving all the time.
Yeah, and it seems like starting with something simple like that, does it beat the other opportunities to do stitching? Do you need to have a remote doctor operating a robot to do that if you've got, say, a kit that has staples with instructions?
Or an AI surgeon that knows how to do the basic stuff really well.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Just like a little automatic kit you put on the wound, and it's a robot that knows what to do.
Yeah. And it leads to the point where we all don't have to know anything anymore.
Well, no, it'll never be that. We're going to have to be better at knowing everything so that we can select the right tool and use it intelligently.
Greg wants to know if the Van Gogh robot can perform ear removal from across the world. Not Van Gogh, Gregory. It's Da Vinci. Da Vinci.
Da Vinci.
All right. Let's look more closely at billionaires in space. Next segment. See you after the news.
And we have our guest, Bruce Damer.
Dr. Bruce Damer coming on, Bobby Wilder, and this is Future, and me.
Trees
Yeah, we're flying all right. We're talking about billionaires in space. We're talking about how Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and
Sir Richard Branson
have all committed billions to space exploration. And is this a good thing to go private into space? What does this tell us about society? Is it dangerous, even? What about government support? Does it show the government is lagging in research with this? Or is this a hand-in-hand helpfulness between the two? What's the story? So to help us sort out some of this, we have Dr. Bruce Damer on the line with us, one of our regular science folks out there in the world. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Future.
So did you see Bezos this morning, Bruce? Were you, did you have a chance to check
out? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was up early to watch that, and then all of the landing, of course, and then the news conference, and then the video from within the capsule. It was just a tremendous day on the anniversary of Apollo 11's landing in 1969.
That's right. That's today, right?
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
And they did an 11-minute flight.
52 years.
I guess they like the 11s, huh? They're a bunch of wizards over there.
Yeah.
It's yet another breakthrough that we've been just seeing, that the 2020s are going to be as potentially exciting as the 1960s.
Only it seems to be involving a lot of private capital. What does that tell you?
It's wonderful. That program came in while I was doing a lot of work for NASA at our team at Digital Space, and it's called COTS, Commercial Off the Shelf. And the Pentagon was starting to adopt it, and NASA did. And NASA decided, we just can't afford to fly these regular flights at such high cost to the taxpayer. We need to actually have real competition and drive costs down and kind of get out of the transportation business. And the shuttle was just too costly and too risky. So thank goodness, you know, we had companies that stepped up and invested their own capital and have produced reliable, you know, reusable launch systems, specifically SpaceX, that are going to open access to space much faster than the traditional government supergiant contractor would ever have done, who were not innovating.
So for the uninitiated, how is the government supporting this now? Are they giving money to the private companies?
Yeah, so there was initially awards, just like little companies like mine, they would have a competition and the companies would compete for the money, and then they would have performance-based contracts to deliver these systems, and SpaceX won out. I mean, it beat Orbital Sciences, it ultimately beat ULA, United Launch Alliance, for the moon contract now. It was basically opening the marketplace to just get innovation going again and get costs down, and it's changing the whole landscape.
From what I could see, it was before this, it was government and it was a big business. It was Lockheed,
Boeing. And
so somehow little guys are able to compete effectively with the big guys thanks to the new structure.
And this happened in the 1920s in aviation. So aviation was kind of a weird, risky activity. Then it got supported by various armies around the world, World War One, with the first army aircraft. But in order to get a real industry going, the U.S. government actually gave out contracts for delivery of mail, and they created airmail in the 20s, and that capitalized companies like Continental and American and whatnot. So that by the 1930s, they had enough going for them that they could create actual passenger services in the 30s.
Yeah, that's interesting, given that Bezos' background with Amazon.
Yeah, and it changed the world. I mean, we possibly wouldn't have had passenger travel and all the larger airplanes and pressurized airplanes as soon as we did if the government hadn't kick-started it.
Well, it makes sense that the government is a big customer for these new startup industries because it gives them a steady cash flow, but then it leaves the innovation in the hands of the people who are still trying to make it profitable.
Yeah, and as soon as you get corporations in bed with government where they're not answerable to the market or to performance contracts, you get things like the waste that we see in the Pentagon procurement. So NASA didn't have you know, nearly the budget of the Pentagon to waste. So they said, we'll just open the market. And it's really worked. So we're seeing per pound, per kilogram costs dropping now. And the reusability of the rockets are cleaner, safer. We're finally getting that breakthrough we thought we would get with the shuttle. But the shuttle really couldn't deliver on its promises.
I got a strange question from the audience. Hi. Aren't the billionaires just trying to escape the problems of Earth by going to space?
Like the problems are going to be easier to handle from a little tiny space capsule. I think that's such a silly idea.
I know.
Well, you know, I'll let Jeff Bezos' answer sort of speak for itself, which is that if we hadn't gone to space, we wouldn't know the condition of our planet. We wouldn't be able to see it from above. We wouldn't be able to communicate in the way we do, monitor the weather, understand how we could better manage it, and just have a spiritual, philosophical perspective on sort of the little blue marble that we're on. And so the value of space has been immense and probably is essential for our survival in the future.
Well, you talk about its ability to help us see the planet as a whole, and it's very helpful in terms of the health of the planet. But it seems to have a spiritual component too. Edgar Mitchell in the Apollo 14 had an epiphany when he saw the Earth as a whole living system. It seems like Jeff was going for that kind of epiphany himself.
Yeah, and in fact, with Blue Origin and with Virgin Galactic, we're going to see thousands or tens of thousands of people be able to get that, what's called an overview effect. Hmm. It is a sort of a spiritual download that affected a lot of the Apollo astronauts and earlier and shuttle astronauts and really changed them. So it's the overview effect is potentially now available to thousands of us or hundreds of thousands. Because in a sense, what Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin have done is they've made it, you know, safe, repeatable, so you can actually do it as a service, like an airplane trip, like a balloon trip. And so people can have access.
Sure. And I just always like to remind people that the vision for the future of space travel and air travel are very much intermingled, because the launch systems that they're developing for getting to the space area are going to be used to revolutionize the way that airplane travel happens. There's all kinds of models about just going up instead of through the atmosphere.
Yeah, and in fact, Jeff pointed that out this morning as well, with point-to-point transportation being possible, sort of parabolic flight transportation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's interesting is if you look beyond what we saw in the news in the last week, you see two architects of the future of space that are not in the government, they're not in the military, and it's Elon Musk, whose vision is to go to Mars and perhaps try to make Mars at least a portion of it habitable for humans. That's a really big challenge, by the way. And Jeff Bezos's vision comes from Gerard O'Neill and his space colonies, L5 colony,
the
1970s. And so that's Jeff's approach.
Oh,
so
could you? That's interesting. Both of them have a longer range plan. Now, for the uninitiated, could you tell them a little bit about what the L5 vision was?
So the L5 vision was at the Lagrange Point 5. You could place a huge rotating spherical, or actually cylindrical in that case, colony that is at a stable place and is able to be reached easily. And if you built this immense colony for hundreds of thousands or millions of people, you could create kind of a second Earth. Mm. And that's what we may be seeing is possible. That's certainly in Jeff Bezos' imagination. He, like me, saw all of that in the 70s and then the 80s, and he created the means to do that personally, at least get part of the way there.
Hmm. Now, do you still think this is possible?
I think it is. I think it probably will require more effort than from one company. And a team of us, you'll remember from about 4 years or 5 years ago, we came up with a way to mine asteroids by enclosing them in a fabric, almost like a balloon. Mm-hmm. And we believe that this, we call it Shepard 2. The new Shepard is what launched Jeff Bezos and the others today. Our Shepard is spelled a little differently. We proposed back in 2015, and we think of it as the Shepard, like the dog that can go and shepherd and herd asteroids, which are full of fuel and the ability to get minerals and to build Jeff Bezos' space colonies.
So the asteroid belts have what we need to do something like that.
They have what we need, and so that's now coming back to life, too. I was just on the Space Show, a big podcast about that, and we've just put out some new articles, and there's a whole new sort of momentum around that design, because if Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk want to operate in space, they're going to need fueling stations and resupply in space, not lifting everything from
the Earth, which seems like
right.
And so would you say that the asteroid belt is kind of like the Costco, Home Depot of the solar system?
It kind of is like the Belters in The Expanse. They showed putting icy asteroids into an enclosure and mining it. That's kind of what we're proposing, and that one or both of those companies ought to start investing in this tech first. You couldn't have a Tesla car if you didn't have recharging stations. And so we need to build that kind of infrastructure now in the solar system.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got some questions coming in, but one of the things is often people ask, why spend the money out there when we have immediate issues we could spend the money on right now? Why don't we investigating how to improve the education system or eliminate poverty or have a decent medical system?
That's one of the very old questions. And what we look at is the huge magnifier benefits of investing in space versus a lot of the other things that we do as humans. If you look at what we waste on war, it was probably a million times what we invest in space or even AI. We really have to cut down on the destructive kind of waste that we're already engaged in. If we could eliminate all that, arms development, etc.
Yeah, right. Good point. All right, we'll be right back. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Damer on billionaires in space and what's next for our space horizons. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Damer and Bobby Wilder and Mrs. Future and myself, Dr. Future.
And we're talking about space.
Yes. And Bruce, do you think that space exploration could unite us? I mean, we're hearing all this talk about weapons in space now with the Space Force and all that. What can we do about that?
Despite what politicians might do in what used to be called saber rattling.
Yeah.
So politicians come in and they rattle the saber and they threaten others, and they're doing it for their popularity and their power base. But behind the scenes, countries are cooperating. We wouldn't have geostationary satellites the way we do. We wouldn't have the internet. We wouldn't have had supply chain, all this stuff, if fundamentally people weren't. So in a sense, it's like show. It's like theater that's going on. Things like Space Force and whatnot. And it's sort of theatrical, but it's not real. The practical matter is space is really difficult. It's very lethal environment to work in, and you need to have as much support as you can and as much mutual aid. And this is why scientists and engineers are worldwide collaborate in space without exception.
You know, Bruce, I've been watching the last few days the press conferences of Danny Sheehan and Stephen Greer, and they were talking about the fact that Russia and China are proposing a no weapons in space treaty that they've signed on to, and that the holdout for that is the United States. And I'm wondering if you're familiar with that and if you have any thoughts on that.
I don't track that at all, Mrs. Future. I haven't tracked it.
Well, I guess the concern is that certainly the intelligence agencies all have very powerful telescopes, not aimed at the stars, but aimed at the Earth and other forms of electronic eavesdropping from space that make it way easier to have satellites. So I guess if you're thinking along those lines, that particular cabal would have the resources to continue to advance their agendas, which would include weapons in space. And it's a different...
Well, unless we have a treaty.
One has to remember that after the Cold War ended, the United Launch Alliance bought all their rocket engines from Russians. So, I mean, a lot of U.S. spy satellite launches are through the supply of the Russian engines. Anyway, behind the scenes, it's a lot more integrated.
Yeah, it is. So that's a good thing, in your estimation.
By the way, I was super proud of Blue Origin because 2 years ago, right about now, I was up at Blue Origin in Kent, Washington, getting a tour of the factory, and they showed me the 3D printing of that very engine or components of that very engine that flew the crew today.
Wow.
And then they opened the door and they let me go into the New Shepard and to sit in those seats in that wonderful wide payload fairing kind of.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. Nice. You got to warm the seats for them, huh?
I did. And it was so wonderful seeing the Mercury astronaut, the woman, just so thrilled today. Did you see her and you saw her? Jeff was like making
Wally.
Sure she didn't float the Wally. Yes, she didn't float the wrong way. And it was just a beautiful.
She was so excited. Share. Yeah, it was such a
so
wonderful
excited.
Thing for that.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that was very special to see them. And then the youngest kid to ever go in space went up, a Dutch boy at 18 years old.
Yes, Oliver Damon.
Uh-huh.
His name was almost similar to yours. Instead of Damer, he was Damon.
Damon, yeah. And I think what Jeff's done is it's amazing. He's shown that it's pretty democratized, at least suborbital flights. The reason it's called New Shepard is because of Alan Shepard on the Redstone rocket in 1961 doing the suborbital flight.
Right, 60 years ago. 60 years ago, David.
Yeah. And so if you watch the movie The Right Stuff, you'll see a really good depiction of that.
Right. Finally, we have what we had back in 61 today for everyone else, only it's fully automated now. And
oh, yeah, that was the remarkable thing about the Bezos
fully crew. Full automation?
Is that it was an all-civilian flight, and the rocket was robotic.
Yeah, and here's the amazing thing. It was the first crewed flight, because you'd nominally, you know, you would have run it with military test pilots first and everything, but they, it's actually a huge breakthrough in so many ways, and it's a liquid oxygen hydrogen system. It just produces steam.
Right, no pollution.
It's way less polluting than an airliner. He's just nailed it, and he did it on his own, 20 years of work, and I hope that New Glenn and New Armstrong and the Vega rockets will help to open space even further, getting into orbit and getting to, you know, the moon, and especially for us asteroids, you know, propelling a Shepard to capture an asteroid.
Hmm. Now, if you were running NASA, maybe you might suggest a project along those lines, I would assume.
Yeah. We proposed to NASA 5 years ago and got good scores on our idea. It was still very, you know, what was called notional or a low technology readiness level, but that's what's going to be done in the 20s when we get the company up and running and the testing up and running. But that's the subject for another Dr. Future show.
Indeed. I imagine you'd be thinking of scenarios of how all three of these billionaires can play nice together as they explore the frontier.
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, if you saw the capabilities of SpaceX and Starship emerging with perhaps what New Glenn is going to be able to do in terms of the size of the payloads, you could see them working together to do something pretty cool.
Yeah, and Bigelow with his space hotel.
Yeah, inflatables are a key.
Yeah.
They're absolutely a key.
Nice and light, a big space. And we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. We have Kim from Mountain View. Hello, Kim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
You know, I'm sorry to bring the tone down, but I can't stand this fawning over this narcissistic hyper-capitalist whose company, Amazon, is actively destroying this planet. Did you see his press conference where he smugly thanked us suckers who buys products?
He thanked everyone who bought Amazon, yeah. That was a way of including us all in the movie.
No, this is unbelievable. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. His calculating guy, it wasn't a mistake, and he's rubbing our noses in it.
Uh-huh.
This is a pointless exercise. He should be spending his money on trying to improve this planet. And this business about added as an afterthought, oh, going into space helps the Earth too. No, it doesn't. And the other narcissistic hyper-capitalist Musk, he's in the same boat, destroying Boca Chica wetlands, asking to pave over it. What is wrong with these guys? I'm sorry, kind of phallic fantasy they have.
Okay, well, you know that at the very end of the press conference, Bezos gave away $200 million awards, one to
Van Jones
who he gets to give that money away to charities of his choice.
And one to Jose Andres, who is quite famous for feeding people during crises.
Yeah. And Bruce?
It's a fraction, a tiny fraction. You know, Musk gives nothing to charity. And by the way, none of that money is going to help the wildfires in California. Unfortunately, all the plastic junk that's being made that people don't need and they can't afford made in China is destroying this planet. So enough of the fawning over these narcissistic guys.
Well, Kim, you're a very good critic, but it's really important to have a vision of your own to put your energy behind if you want to make things happen.
Fix the planet, I think, is what he's saying. Yeah, he has a vision for improving the planet itself, right, rather than going off of it. Bruce, do you have any comment on
that? Help the planet.
Yeah,
I think since we're like a minute and a half from the end, I just wanted to see if there were specifically any questions about space that I could address. As I don't really work in the area of the caller is talking about. I worked on a climate mitigation project in 2019 and saw the scale and scope of the challenges ahead of us and put out some solutions. But since COVID, I haven't really been able to work on that anymore.
Well, I would think you could talk about the role that the technology in space can play in helping us deal with the challenges of things like climate issues.
Forest fires, why fire?
Yeah, one thing is actually really fascinating. Diego Sanz Gil from here in Boulder Creek, who lost his home in the CZU fire, has a company called Pachama, and they use satellite imagery to help sell carbon credits to reforest areas, and they sell it to all the big tech companies, and they're doing really well. So the tech companies invest in reforestation on a large scale to get the carbon credits, and there's now a market. And that's a real solution.
That's a good one.
All right, thanks for that.
Yeah. Very
and
good.
Kim,
and a final comment from Kim?
If you want to say something, we're going to be closing up in 30 seconds here.
I'm extremely concerned about CCP spies at SpaceX and Blue Origin. I think when NASA controlled it, I'm sure that the checks on the workers were much, much more stringent.
Okay,
thank
good
you
points.
Very much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the call. And callers, hang on. We'll be back after this.
I love your program.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate your call. All right. This is KCO Santa Cruz.
Okay, good. And thank you, Bruce, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome. See you guys next time.
Okay. Take care.
See you next time.
We have a poem here. It's called Whitey on the Moon. And it was inspired. It was inspired by some whiteys on the moon. So I want to give credit where credit is due. All right. That's it. A rat done bit my sister Nell with whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night, 'cause whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me, 'cause whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the Moon.
It's time for the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Boy, that was a spirited conversation.
Yes, space is so controversial.
It is. I have some more controversy there to share with you. Also, some interesting news. Thanks, Greg, for sharing us some space history news. We have a caller on the line, which we'll get to in a moment. Hold on there, caller. We'll be right with you. But it was on this day in 1976 that the U.S. Viking 1 landed on Mars. The Chris Palentia. The first Martian landing. It was also a 56 test of a nuclear bomb in the Bikini Islands in 1956. Yeah. Big day in many respects.
Big day in space.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Apollo 11 landing.
Mm-hmm.
Tranquility Base here. We have a caller?
We do. Let's say hello to Gary in Live Oak. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah, hi. It was just a shorty. I know we can all love people that have given us favors. But looking at Jeff Bezos and his participation in censorship is one thing. It's like, you know, Hitler created the Autobahn and, you know, and a lot of new improvements that, you know, worked very well for people in commerce and the general welfare. But you can't excuse him at the same time for horrific things that are happening to our individual freedom. And maybe that's what the previous caller was trying to get at. And, you know, we all know that these award shows and things put on, you know, by the Red Cross or the Rotary Club or all the rest of it does, you know, is kind of a cover-up for policies that really affect, you know, our personal lives many times. Also, I was wondering what you felt about Michael Crichton, who wrote a number of books. One of them was State of Fear, but he's a lot of, you know, technology and science in his books, and I found that he was super valuable, and I think he died a little bit too early, but if you have any comments on Michael Crichton, I think he's...
I used to devour his books as a kid.
Didn't he have a really famous movie? What was the name of that movie?
The Andromeda Strain.
The Andromeda Strain, right.
Did you see that one, Colin?
It's kind of the first pandemic conspiracy movie, right?
Well, it was about a virus from outer space. I give you a conspiracy there. He was a medical student at the time, so he was able to put real science into his science fiction, which made it all the more compelling. Mm-hmm. Plus, he had a great sense of pacing, and he could really keep you on the edge of your seat just reading his books. It's fascinating. I loved it. And it was great for me.
And apparently, according to Susan Simon, he also is affiliated with Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, the great train robbery. The guy integrated a real history in it. Okay. There is a next Netflix series. I hope it comes to my mind. I just grabbed it. It's out of Toronto. It's a detective in Canada at the turn of the century, and it's really valuable because it integrates all kinds of history from the Webbs, Bernard Shaw, the Culver group that funded the Confederates, Emma Goldman. It has so many facts compared to a lot of the crap that we're given as fiction, and at least it had points of history, whether you agreed with the persons or not. It would touch some, there'd be touch points where you'd get some verification or viability, no matter where he's coming from, that at least he's done some of his homework. So I can't think of that right now, but it's presently, I just switched from Xfinity to AT&T, and it's available on AT&T, and if I think of the name, I'll email it to you guys. Oh, one other thing. It's real hard to email to any specific host on KSCO. I mean, there's no way to reach you or any other person with a document or comment.
Oh, dear. Let me help you with that. We're future at KSCO.com. Just future. The word future at KSCO.com.
Okay,
and you can get anything, including attachments to us, PDFs.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, that's really valuable because there's a lot of documents out there, and, you know, that's according to you, or I don't know about that, but, you know, at least the person or the host, you know, it's valuable to you guys because you can touch base with it, and,
Oh, we totally appreciate that. Also, you can use Facebook to get us messages even during the show. We do have a Dr. Future page on Facebook.
But Future at KSCO is the easiest
feed,
way.
Twitter feed. Twitter feed for Dr. Future?
Yeah, we do. If you use Twitter, but I don't think our audience is a particularly Twitter.
They used to hold senior classes for old folks in Santa Cruz to learn, you know, the social media. And now I am a senior, and everything's closed.
But, oh, dear.
Anyway, I appreciate your program. Thanks. You have a good day.
All right, Gary, thanks for
the call.
Look
forward to your downloads.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You ready for Wendell?
Absolutely. Let's talk to Wendell.
All right, let's talk to Wendell in Reno. Hi, Wendell.
Hey, Wendell.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys if you're up for an experiment.
Yeah, sure. It's fun.
Okay, years ago, we're talking back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Before George Norrie, Art Bell.
Yeah, I know Art.
Yeah, we were avid. Art Bell fans.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, I was too. But what he did was he had a couple of shows, and he opened up the line, the call-in line, to anybody claiming to be an alien or an extraterrestrial.
Oh, great.
Well, you know, it does kind of fit in a little bit with our theme here.
Well, we're definitely open to anybody claiming to be an alien, for sure.
Do we have a special alien line, Mrs. Future?
Let our screener know.
Yeah, let the screener know if you're an alien or not. We'll be happy to talk to you.
What I was thinking is you wouldn't have to use the whole show, maybe just a half a show.
Yeah, we were thinking of 3:30 to 4.
Just see who calls up. You know, he got some really interesting calls. I remember he had one call, and boy, I'll tell you, it sure sounded like somebody from another planet.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it was really kind of fascinating. Of course, he had a lot of people that were, you know, nut jobs to be expected.
And he had the time traveler, right?
Yeah, you have to be able to filter your calls.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
But he did have some really interesting people.
Yeah.
Or whatever they were, call in.
We've got to go to a break real quick, Wendell. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
We'll throw out our lure and see what happens. Welcome back to the show. We were just talking to Wendell in
Reno, Nevada,
yes, about the idea of having a alien line for people to call in if they're aliens.
Yeah.
Now, you remember Art Bell was late night, right? That was late night.
Right.
And late night, that kind of...
It's fringier than daytime traffic.
The lines between reality and fantasy.
Look at the modern media, I think the lines between fantasy and reality have been totally blurred.
Well, you're talking about the virus now, huh?
I wasn't naming names. I'm just saying the media is determined by paychecks now much more than it is by facts and integrity. We're not in the Walter Cronkite era anymore.
Well, maybe there are day aliens.
Well, if you listen to some of the people who have regular alien encounters, like Stephen Greer, not only are there day aliens, there are so many aliens. Some of them look very humanoid, and some of them don't.
Well, there's that whole realm of consciousness, too, like where the brain is a transceiver, and it's just picking up other channels of information. And some people are better channels than others for that kind of thinking.
That's right. Right. If you have a different model of reality than the traditional physics science model.
A lot of people embrace mediums.
Sure, sure.
I've met some very, very interesting people when I worked at the university. And there was one guy, he was a chemistry professor.
Yeah.
And he went by the name One Sun.
One Sun.
And he claimed he was a Pleiadian.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, one time, I said, what is the purpose of aliens coming here? Is this a stopover planet, or do you guys have some kind of intentions, or what?
Yeah, are we entertainment, or what?
One thing I would love to know is if they're planning on revealing themselves to the general public. I'd love to know if the answer is yes.
Well, it's a good question, but what do you mean by the general public? You mean like on the NBC News?
Well, and could I just also say, are you not aware of the Disclosure Project? Supposedly, the National Press Club announcement of the... Stephen Greer is a person who has a long career of collecting all the testimonials from the military of their alien encounters, including everything from like stopping nuclear missile blasts and taking weaponized aircraft that were flying secretly to space and downing them.
Turning off and turning on missile silos.
Yeah, and so there is a very developed community of people who are involved in the space alien contact issue.
I think one of the people is Linda Moult now.
Right.
Yeah, there
are
you go.
Familiar with her?
Sure.
Sure, yeah, the Strange Harvest.
Linda Moult now, who was a Stanford graduate, she's a friend of mine, and I talked to her recently, and she said that the rumor amongst the UFO community, the people who study ufology, she said is that this Christmas is going to be a big event. She wasn't specific, and she couldn't be specific because she didn't know the details. But the rumor floating around is that we're going to be really blown away by something that happens right around Christmas time of this year.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I think people who are paying attention to this phenomenon are aware that there is a very under-media represented population on the planet that are very diligently engaged in recognizing the presence of the rest of the inhabitants of space, the extraterrestrials, and that the message that they want us to understand is that they are peaceful, they have been here with our evolutionary development for a very long time, and if we can prove that we're an enlightened planetary culture rather than a violent planetary culture with a malevolent agenda, we can join the Galactic
Federation
as
they're
waiting for members.
Us.
Yeah, they're waiting,
just waiting for us to reach a stage where we will understand.
They're waiting for us to rise above ape level existence. And I think we are going to evolve at some point, I hope.
Yeah, I think some of us are. And they say just need a critical mass and then everyone shifts.
We just need enough of us to make sure that the ape level sociopaths aren't in charge of the weapons in space. And that's why I brought up the idea of the treaty to keep weapons out of space.
Yeah, and that's partly in your consciousness, too. You focus on what needs to be done rather than on trying to stop the bad guys.
That's right. We need an affirmation of what we should do rather than a cancel culture of what we shouldn't do, because cancel culture is the idea that the crabs are in the bucket and they're heading to get cooked, but they're holding the legs of the crabs that are trying to escape, right? That's the cancel culture.
The ones that the crabs in the bucket are trying to stop the other crabs from escaping.
That's right. But but the affirmation culture is those who are inventing the world that they want to live in. And they're inviting everybody who's ready for that world to come together and to do it from a place of unity and celebration of each other's gifts without the idea of violent domination. Right? It's very simple.
I really believe that. Well, thank you for your open-mindedness, and I love your show, and I hope that you'll consider maybe doing that.
Absolutely. We're open to it anytime. If an alien wants to call us in the daytime.
Yeah, lead the charge, Wendell.
Thank you.
We are officially open for any aliens to call in and
starting
have a chat with us.
3:30. Not before.
I think those crop circles are greeting cards, by the way.
I think you're right. Oh, we have crop circle stories we have to share, Wendell. So right now we're going to go to a couple of other callers, though. The board's lit up.
We spent a couple of summers investigating crop circles, personally, in England. So.
Well, talk about it. I want to hear all about it.
Oh, all right, cool. Bye-bye. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do that. Okay.
All right, let's get our callers first.
All right. First, we're going to go to Terry in Felton. Hi, Terry in Felton.
Oh, hi, everybody. So I'm curious, when you were talking about the 6D, kind of got the feeling that you were excited about it and it's a positive thing. And with even the 5G or any of the Gs,
Well, you bring up a very important point. Bobby, why don't you go first?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely issues with 5G and 6G.
Yeah.
And it's because of these, when you talk about millimeter waves, now we're, for 6G, you're talking about micrometer waves, which are actually 1/100th of a millimeter. And so they're very high frequencies. And the problem is that they only propagate a very short distance. So you'd have to have transmitters in your house, like 5 or 6 in your house, and then up and down the street, you need transmitters, like not just one on every block, but like dozens of them on a block. So it's a complicated technological issue, but also there could be health
Yeah, we're not really thinking a lot about the health elements and electromagnetics and healing is a huge topic. And I think another area of where great breakthroughs can happen, a lot of German research especially has been looking at what electromagnetic frequencies can help heal us.
And I also want to say, Terry, that the designations of the 3, 4, 5, 6G, those are shorthand for big conversations about what technologies can deliver the kind of performance that we as a planet are hoping to get. And it doesn't all have to be wireless and through the airwaves. And the Japanese record that we were talking about was all fiber. So there are really good ways of defining our technological needs so that they're not being manifested in ways that harm us because of our ignorance. And I really think we need to stay focused on how to solve the problem without harm.
Well, yeah, I guess my feeling is it is pretty harmful. And this idea that we need this technology with Mother Earth the way that it is, the way that it was, the way that we were, we survived beautifully. And this gets in the way of our survival. It gets in the way of our health. And the idea that we need it, to me, doesn't make any sense. We have everything we need already. And then just one other comment. I'm curious if the mom-and-pop shops and the private businesses and the employees of this Amazon, I wonder if they share the admiration that other people do with this Jeff Bezos.
Okay, well, that's a good question for putting out there on the airwaves. Happy to ask it. I'm really in the want to say good things about good people club, and I have never met Jeff Bezos, and I think that there's a lot of people who are in the envy club, who are in the blame the visible person club, and that it's very hard to have firsthand information about people who you only know through the filter of their fame. And so I would really caution people about being willing to take them down without a balanced review of the good that they're doing.
Yeah, and I think it's also better to focus on the value of his ideas because we don't know. We really just don't
have. We really don't know. And it's so easy to cast aspersions and to filter the information through your own preferences. And that can change in a minute when the information is replaced with something real.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Terry.
Yeah, it is an interesting issue between the nonstop evolution of our technology with our health. There are a lot of big questions there. And I do think some interdisciplinary teams of scientists need to get together that both understand biology and understand the electromagnetics in biology and also understand 6G and beyond, and to make sure that they're playing nice together.
Well, we also need to remember such a thing as called ethics and morals and responsibility to life. And that needs to be just as big of a part of the conversation.
Yeah. And the terawatt frequencies, we're starting to get into terawatt frequencies, which would be beyond 6G. That's the frequencies we believe nature is using for controlling cellular functions. Mm-hmm. So if we start mucking around with cellular mechanisms accidentally, that could be really bad.
Yeah.
So we do have to eventually tune into how to play nice with our electromagnetic biology with our technology.
That's right. We don't want to pass the evolutionary speed limit, and we want to bring as much wonderfulness and as little suffering as possible.
We should bring
Dr.
Carl Merritt on again to talk about that.
Yes, we should. Let's do that. Meanwhile, we have lots of callers, and we have to go to a break.
Oh, okay.
So, Gerhardt, you're next, and we'll be right back as soon as we listen to some sponsors.
Okay? Yeah, stand by.
Thanks for everything.
Welcome back to the Dr. Mrs. Future Show and Bobby Wilder. And this half hour, we are open to alien calls if you should so want to talk to the likes of us.
Which doesn't mean that we think you're an alien, Gerhardt.
Yeah,
but welcome
to the show. You called before this. Gauntlet was laid. Go ahead.
Unless you are, you let us know.
Okay, have a wonderful good day.
What's up?
Thank you.
That's a really nice show, actually, a wonderful subject. Yes, I'm a legal alien. Thank you very much. I don't have a question. What would be what would be the reaction if the extraterrestrials are coming, and instead of coming here to the U.S., they make looking for the old Banyan Buddhas and stuff like that?
Why not? You know, I would. Think of yourself. If they were
back with the Taliban, what then?
Well, I'd say that the real spiritual enlightened masters see it as all connected. So they would see how the Taliban connect with the likes of us in a way that would actually evolve the whole ball of wax in a
Yeah, if we could start seeing
How would they do that? Well, I don't think anyone knows exactly. I think what they have to do is they have to fly by the seat of their pants. They have to go into a situation knowing everything that you've known in your life so far and apply it to the moment, and you'll come up with things and new ideas in the moment.
So here's one thing I like to say, Gerhard. I like to say, if you change anything, you change everything. And so if you have 100% of the experience of the collected wisdom of the planet and you play with all of it, then those are the lessons that you need to bring with you to space.
That's our real heritage.
That's our real heritage, is everything that everyone's contributed. And there's a spiritual mastery maze. There are many things that have to be learned, and lots of them are contradictory. And in order to become a multi-planet civilization, we have to stop terrorizing ourselves and stop diminishing the inhabitants of this planet to a status where they're not being honored. We need to honor life.
Well,
and we need to honor everyone who's contributing to it.
We might do that, but what happens to the other ones? How come when the other ones get mad and shoot at them, what then?
Well, look, there's always bullies.
They get mad at the whole humanity.
They're sociopaths and bullies. They're people who will never play a unified game.
But we have a huge awareness of that. We understand emotional literacy. We understand wound healing and how it affects post-traumatic stress syndrome. We're having a greater understanding on how to use empathogens like MDMA for healing those wounds. And a lot of those ideas are just now beginning to coalesce and combine. We can heal our species if we should so choose. It's not by looking at these as impossible issues. It creates that. You know, our thoughts create the direction we head in.
Well, anybody who believes that they have an enemy or an adversary
creates
the enemy or the adversary.
Not that they don't exist.
They do exist. And victims exist. And perpetrators exist. And rescuers exist. And so do heroes who do not need to buy into those lessons because they have moved on to other lessons,
well, such as
creating the journey forward. You don't have to put your mental units into the destructive lessons of those who haven't arrived yet.
Well, I hope you're going to survive the first meeting.
Well, I think they're benevolent. There have been many meetings. The first meeting will be for you personally, but there are many people who've had many meetings.
It's like Mars Attacks.
Another question. Do you think they're vegetarians, or do they eat animals like we do?
Well, I think they probably 3D print their food, you know, make it from molecules directly.
Yeah, I think maybe they bathe in it.
The whole food chain will evolve rather dramatically. And I hope
you are not on the menu.
to serve man.
Right, the classic Twilight Zone episode. Right. Yeah. And I hope I'm not on the menu.
Keep you all healthy. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful day.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks.
You too.
Yeah. Well, you know, those are classic fears, and you know, often when one part of our species has traveled and seen another part of our species, like the New World and the Native Americans here, it doesn't always go well. But it can.
And as long as you're wounded and traumatized, then you're like born to the fight.
Yeah.
And you have to fight until you are not the loser. You have to arrive at a place where you're not formed by those energies of diminishment.
There are people who have understood this for a very long time. The initial pilgrims, when they came to Plymouth Rock in 1620, actually got along with the natives for 52 years. They actually figured it out.
It's always those crummy grandchildren who are so entitled, and they ruin it for everyone.
Well, it's interesting to see how these unravel, but it's also even more interesting to see how it actually could coalesce and work.
There you go. Yeah, there's wisdom in every generation. And we have
Colonel Terry?
You ready for Colonel Terry? Hello,
sure.
Colonel
Let's talk
Terry.
To the Colonel.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Hi, smart lady and her bright friends.
And hi, Colonel Terry. How you doing?
Hey, we're
hi.
Trying to light the world here, Colonel.
Well, you're doing well. And I do respect your caring about others, lady. You demonstrate the absolute best of the feminine mystique and the feminine caring and the feminine gift for optimal caring and consideration of others. However,
but,
and I agree with you, as I told the screener.
There's always a but.
I said, however, but.
Yeah.
But the Chinese are designing, and this has come out.
Yeah.
They're designing smaller nuclear weapons to put into satellites to threaten us with. Okay?
Them, yes.
So you think that they're promoting the treaty, but they're not going to honor it anyway because you can count on the Chinese to say one thing and do another? Is that your point?
You can count on the Chinese Communist Party, not the Chinese as a nation or an ethnic group, but the Chinese Communist Party to break its word. The same way, as I've told you before, the Soviet Union broke every treaty they signed with us. We proved it. We had the evidence. We showed it to them. They lied, and they lied again and again, and then we did another new treaty that they broke subsequently. And they did that in order to have a strategic advantage to attack us first, and they configured their defense networks and how they would hide their national leadership, the top of their pyramid called the nomenclatura. They would hide them in tunnels and down underground and ride out nuclear war.
So are you saying that the Chinese Communist Party and the Soviet Union and the United States are currently engaged in a new Cold War that hasn't been decided yet and that everybody's really secretly vying to militarily take over the other one and be in charge of the planet and make everyone else their slave?
That's not what I said.
Well, I'm just trying to translate.
No, he's just saying national security priorities. You can, you know.
The words I said are the Chinese Communist Party, yes, is seeking military dominance. It also is, and it is not long term, it is structuring what it's doing to be able to attack us even from satellites carrying nuclear missiles in violation of the treaties they signed. They also signed the World Trade Organization Agreement preamble, and they broke that as well. And they've been stealing our technology and thousands, if not millions, of American jobs.
And so how do you propose we take care of that?
You say we move them into the status of a true enemy?
Well, they're behaving like a true enemy. They're stealing from us financially, economically, technologically, and they are building to be a threat to us militarily and our allies and friends. That is not consistent with kumbaya.
Well, let's talk about like with like. If we're not in the United States, if we're outside the United States, there's a lot of people who think that the last 50 years was not really kumbaya either. And I love the United States, and I love the United States I grew up in, but we've never been in a United States that was putting all of its economic resources into censoring free speech and trying to violate the Constitution by coercing businesses to insist that people have their personal health choices made for them by a coercive entity. So there's definitely something going on that has little to do with national identity.
Well, what's more important than national security is the question.
How about ethics, the liberation of the spirits of wisdom?
I call it respect for informed wisdom.
That'd be a higher value.
And there are wisdoms. I mean, there are wisdoms that Sun well knows about, too, that are too involved for us to get into. But I am very pleased that on the big picture, the really big picture, Sun, I've had near-death experiences, which convinced me that we have a continuity of consciousness.
Yes.
And that we can elect to take that. I'm not sure that all of us do. Or that all of us qualify for.
Well, it's a training ground, and people have to get to the level where they realize their choice is to be free, and if they don't choose it, then they don't get it. You have to create your own journey to freedom.
What do you think of critical mass?
It's often challenged.
What do you think of critical mass?
Which critical mass?
Well, of the consciousness we're talking about. If a critical number of people have that, then perhaps...
That is possible. It is certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take an awful lot of us to change the trends. on our planet.
You think?
Friends, of pollution. And speaking of that, my last point really is, we started out by poisoning the planet with chemical pollutions. That's how we got here with the age of petroleum and industrial age and all of that. And we now have 49 known chemicals in new mothers, expecting mothers, that are being transmitted to their children.
Yeah, not to mention the vaccinations.
So we're burning the fuse at both ends here.
Then there's the additional pollution you guys made reference to earlier.
Yeah.
That is the electromagnetic spectrum pollution.
Yeah.
And I've seen lots of evidence that convinces me that just as we evolved from, you know, our early standing up ancestors in a planet that wasn't bathed in electromagnetic pollution with a certain harmony of frequencies, and your buddy can mention what those frequencies were, and now we're loaded up with everything from television to by satellite.
Yeah, we've got more and more, and, you know, we should really pay attention to our health and its connection, for sure. That's a big issue.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
And
Thank you for
important. And let's go to a break, and we can continue when we get back. But
yeah,
we got to bring up some articles that
some
address
colors,
that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Colonel
Jerry.
Bye-bye.
Okay, welcome back to the show.
I just want to make 2 points.
Sure, Bobby, go for it.
I think for those callers that have called in and with those concerns, I think before you buy something on the internet, I think you should concentrate, well, think about how you're going to dispose of it in the future and where those plastics are going to end up. And then the other thing is, as far as EMF, I think you could start by creating an EMF sanctuary in your bedroom and try to figure out how to create a some kind of EMF cage.
What do they call it? A Faraday cage?
Faraday cage, yes, exactly. So what you're trying to do, not that you can totally do that, but at least get to there so that you understand if your feelings, can you feel the difference in your bedroom as opposed to out on the street? So those two things, then your consciousness might be aware of what you're really doing to the world.
Yeah. Now, are you worried about your technology affecting your health yourself?
Well, I would consider myself a little bit electrosensitive, EMF sensitive. So because there are certain, like Bluetooth and 2.4 gigahertz, I get a little bit of tinnitus in my ears when I get really close up to those things. And, you know, I have all kinds of meters, trimeters, and I can measure these things. So I'm verified with these meters. So
So have you trained yourself to be more sensitive using these meters to
Well, I'm trying to make myself not so sensitive.
Less sensitive. So,
yes. Okay. But just be able to detect these things that are emitting these frequencies.
Yeah. Said, I don't feel a Wi-Fi unit in this room.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. There's somebody who's got a 5G phone in here.
Right. I have met people that if there's a laptop and the screen's open,
yeah,
they start to get sick. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I've heard of people who can't ride in Teslas because of the electromagnetic fields in the machines.
Yeah, it's their motors. You know, they have an AC motor and it puts out a high electric field. So I think it's very easy to block that. You know, you just need a piece of aluminum and you could shield that. But I don't know why they don't do that in the Teslas.
Yeah. Not enough people experience that.
Well, I think there's such a mystery in terms of what any individual can be consciously aware of, because our thoughts are informed by our senses, but they're also informed by our environment. And there's so much that we don't know. And we've only been aware of the invisible universe of waves and how they might be affecting us for just maybe a few hundred years at the most, right? The wave particle experiments. And everything we know about space is really through analyzing a light spectrum, because all of the radio and light and frequencies that we're using to look beyond the planet, we're also using to look into the structure of the atom. And this whole understanding of the energy universe is still in its nascent development for our planet. And a lot is being revealed every day, and a lot more will be revealed in the next century.
Well, I would go so far as to say is that your experience every moment is constantly informing you about the nature of reality.
Yes.
Every moment.
Yes. And when I was reading Ralph Abraham's book, Form and Vibration, he was talking about the reason that he was writing is to encourage scientists to view their information with an understanding that there is an energy nature to every piece of matter, and also that there is a coherence that is a wave-like pattern, that when you start looking at matter that way, instead of as hard things that can be broken, you have a very different understanding of it. So the anti-technology, anti-magnetic wave feelings for people who feel like our reality is not as good as it used to be because of these new inventions that have shifted what we're paying attention to are vulnerable. And they need to have a way of setting their priorities about the environment in which they want to exist. And we need to develop technology in such a way that there are places where people don't have to be inundated by it. And that kind of respectful development and conversation about how people's individual preferences can be accommodated has to be part of the unfoldment.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, nice future thought. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I know, other terms of breakthrough tech that looks fascinating. There's a new AI software that allows us to spot prostate cancer before symptoms even present themselves. Very interesting technology. It's a form of diagnosing cancer. Prostate cancer is killing a lot of people, and it's hard to catch because it's very slow growing, and there's not a lot of reason to catch it early unless you're looking for it. There's new software that allows you to, if you're getting a CT scan, if you're getting a CT scan, say, for joints or your bones, you can now use the same scan for looking for prostate cancer, something that even a well-trained human eye struggles to do. But the AIs are able to see signs of prostate cancer in the CT scan.
So it's an AI program?
Yes, it analyzes the CT scan, right.
I see.
Looking for telltale signs of prostate cancer that even humans have a hard time seeing. Very interesting. It's kind of like a sniffer dog for software, you know. It's, the AI is looking for things that are beyond the human abilities to see, but the AI can perceive some of these patterns.
Right.
This way the dog can smell things that human noses can't.
Right. And so if we can relate to things like AIs as our friends who are here to assist us rather than things that operate differently than we're used to and are here to harm us, we will actually be able to put them in the best use.
I think so. And I do believe that many folks have experienced like a heaven on earth without any technology at all. And I think that has certainly been done by our species. I think we've actually accomplished that.
Well, in past civilizations. I would say that we've been in the cradle of Mother Nature, and because of our inability to nurture Mother Nature through our own ignorance, we have created a crisis that we need to respond to because we're destabilizing the balances that we were born into.
As we're given access to the controls of creation,
yeah,
we'll have more responsibility to do it right.
That's right. And so we have to always give it back. We always have to honor where we've come from and do our best to offer something to the future that makes things better.
Yeah. Stay humble. As you gain
stay
wisdom.
Humble, stay helpful, stay mm-hmm. loving, stay dutiful, and do all these things
happy.
In a way that doesn't have negative emotions. Don't do things from anger, resentment, envy, a desire to tear things down, right? Those are the emotions we have to transcend.
Unless you're a particular type of person that's supposed to be doing that. I do think there are people that are disassemblers. that take apart the old system, while a lot of other people are building the new systems of thinking, the blockchains. It's a different mentality, and there are different people for different roles.
Okay, we've got about 2 minutes.
Okay, go ahead. We've got a caller.
Thomas,
let's do that.
In Watsonville wants to talk about downtime. Hi, Thomas.
Okay.
Hi, just a couple of things. First of all, this wasn't my original point, but you guys are scientists, a scientific show. There is no Mother Nature, okay, Mrs. Future. Let's just say that. There's no mother. There's no Mother Nature. It's a rock.
Well,
there's
you have
it's
a mother?
Just a rock.
Decentralized intelligence.
Thomas, do you have a mother? Thomas, do you
yes,
have a mother?
Yes, she's a real person. So this rock is not a mother, okay? She didn't bear us. We didn't come from it. It's not... Okay, that wasn't my point, but I'm just saying you're a scientist, so don't say Mother Nature because there's nothing mother. It's just a rock, okay?
Not a big fan of anthropomorphism.
No, you...
Okay, and here's another thing for Bobby. For Bobby, I'm just curious because you seem to have all this information all the time. I feel in a well-balanced mind, like, Bobby, do you ever take breaks from worrying about RF stuff and all the... Do you ever, like... just kind of turn everything off and go sit by a river somewhere, or are you just would you be lost without all the information?
You know, a week ago I was at Kings Canyon, and there's no cell reception, there's nothing there, you know. So for 5 days I had no communication, none of my stuff worked, you know. And
that's called bliss.
Yes, it was great.
I mean, that's Mother Nature. You want to talk about Mother Nature? My point is maybe you need to stop sometimes. Maybe everyone needs to stop being bombarded with all this information. Turn off your phones, turn off your laptops, and take a walk outside. And remember that we are just pieces of Earth on a big old rock.
Good advice.
Thank
good
you,
advice.
Thomas.
I think we're
going
to go out for
totally
a beach
agree.
Walk now. Thank you for inspiring us to do that.
Yes.
That's important, yeah, to actually just tune into nature, get away from the technology, and realize
Kick
that that's who we are.
Take your shoes off, walk on the beach, ground yourself.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, that's about it for another week, everybody. This is KSEO Santa Cruz.
Thanks for listening, and have a great week. We look forward to seeing you towards the end of the month. Till then.